If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
I have an embarrassing admission, Adam. This is going to be a weird episode.
Wow. Okay.
I watched the first 15 minutes of this episode 2 weeks ago.
Ooh.
And I think what happened was we were going to sit down and record two episodes, and I was just starting in on this episode, and you were like, hey dude, there's no way I can do two today, we've got to do one. So I was like, oh fuck it, I won't finish this episode, I'll just like rewatch it later. But then I forgot that I had made that decision,
and Netflix or whatever told you that this like they marked it as complete.
Yeah, I have no loyalty on the streaming service I use to watch Deep Space Nine.
You're a streaming whore.
I bounce back and forth. I sometimes watch it on CBS All Access.
You're a streaming sex worker. That was not the right thing to say.
Yeah.
Are you a person who handwrites notes for this show? Because the reason that I always know what episode we're doing is because I use the Notes app, and I always have that organized in order of season and episode.
I'm Adam. I'm so organized. I never forget anything.
That's not what I said or how I said it.
I did have notes, and I
you know what it is, Ben? It's, I'm Adam. I can't remember anything because my brain is fucking dumb, so I need to write every fucking thing down so I don't look like an idiot in front of my wife and my friends. That's actually what's happening here.
I looked at my notebook, and there was like what looked to be a full amount of notes for season 4, episode 14. And so I said, I must be on season 4, episode 15. And I watched that first thing this morning, and then I watched episode 16. So I'm actually ahead, but
you're out there.
I was sitting down and I realized like, oh shit, like I'm not ahead. And I had to scramble and watch the last, you know, 35 minutes of this episode.
Jeez.
So I don't really remember how the beginning part goes. You might have to, might lean on you for a plot synopsis in that part.
I got you.
This is all in service of something important, though.
Oh, okay. More important than the show.
It's in service of the fact that you just turned 40 and we were going on a trip to celebrate your birthday.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I was crunched for time. That's why you were crunched for time.
Yeah, that's true. We were recording right up against our out day, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a thing. Those were heady times.
Your birthday made me as sick as I have ever felt.
I don't know how to take that.
Your actual birthday was super fun, but we were in Mexico, and I caught something. Probably a food-related pathogen got into me, and the day after, I was super-duper sick.
Yeah, a lot of speculation about what exactly happened, but like many trips to Mexico...
My wife thinks it's a moral failing on my part.
She's just happy that she didn't have to dodge your touch over the course of that trip. You were too sick to perform.
She definitely had the, like, was taking care of me, but also was like, what? You're fucking sick? Oh, come on.
Well, I mean, I...
Because it was like, initially it seemed like I just had a bad hangover, you know?
I mean, that was the speculation. I'll tell you, the speculation from the group was, boy, Ben really went for it last night. What the fuck? And I say that not in a, at the time of the partying, you were acting out of control or anything. It was just like, only in retrospect did we truly understand the depravity that that you were into at the time.
I didn't get out of control, and I didn't drink particularly more or less than anybody else, I don't think.
That's what I'm saying. So the next day, we were all like, wow, he must have had a lot more than we thought, because that was...
He must have been sneaking butt shots of Ricea.
I mean, there was a lot of pool drinking happening. I'll give you my theory, Ben, was that you drank pool water on accident.
That pool water was pretty heinous.
Because the pool water for a lot of the trip, fairly cloudy.
Yeah.
By virtue of all of the pool drinking we were doing, and that once you filled up the pool with our entire party of people, it was pretty full. It was like hot tub filled.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what you want. You want a thick pool.
Well, you got a thick pool, baby.
That was a great time, and I'm so glad that you and your wife were there to celebrate my big milestone.
It was amazing, and it was really fun to be there with you and all your friends. Like the group of people you have in your life is really great, and it felt really special to get to participate in that.
Well, you're in
4-0,
buddy.
Man, big year.
Yeah, right. You know, before, during, and now. Doesn't quite feel like it. Like I just feel like we had a great big party in a fun place, and that my age was sort of inconsequential. But I'm really glad everyone was there, and you guys especially. It was super fun.
It was great, man. Well, do you want to get into this episode that I'm going to vaguely remember what happened in?
Yeah, why not? Let's do it. It's Deep Space Nine, Season 4, Episode 14, Sons of Moog.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
So this one starts with Worf fighting swords with Dax, and I remember this as being pretty steamy.
You're not wrong, because it's the sort of fighting that happens in a Conan film where there's like a lot of close-up sword play, and sword play to the degree that like you're close enough to kiss the person you're sword fighting with certain times, like that kind of thing. Here's the question.
That would be a great way to distract an enemy, I feel like.
Yeah, you just go for some smooching.
Just plant one on them. Hey!
This is clearly a hollow suite program, and we know this because at the end of the scene you hear a door called for and a door appearing. The sound effect of it, though, is a Enterprise arch appearance and a door open, which I thought was a little incongruent for a hollow suite.
Do you think that they just knew that we would know what that sound meant, but not necessarily that there's an analogous sound for a Ferengi hollow suite, but we just haven't learned what that is?
I think so.
They couldn't lean on that. It's like you either have to show it or use a sound effect, right?
Yeah, and if you are 2/3 of the way through a season and you're starting to scrutinize your budget in a line producer kind of way, you're probably just going to play the sound effect at this point and not and not throw to arch.
Yeah, it's like it's either a $10,000 special effect or something that's essentially free.
Yeah. Ben, I was wondering if, like, from all we know about Worf, he's a guy who does his calisthenics with the safeties off. Do you think that those are the settings he uses with Dax? Like, what would happen if a Mechleth went into a shoulder blade here? Is that...
a human female would not be strong enough for my calisthenics program.
Like, what if he inadvertently C-sectioned the ankylosaur?
It just goes flying across the room.
Would that be the grossest thing ever to happen in Star Trek?
What if the ankylosaur comes flying out, but then like lands in a 3-point stance like a superhero, and then starts kicking ass and taking out NPCs?
It's wet and it lands in the sand, and then it's so dirty. You'll never get it clean again.
Oh yeah. It's like a sneaker that you wear on the beach.
This feels like the beginning of something between Dax and Worf, and it makes me wonder, whatever happened to Worf and Troi, which was like the last hot and heavy relationship that Worf had. There was
no attempt to write that out.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder,
I'm all for this Dax Worf shit, but I do feel like maybe in the last episode you could have just had some like since Counselor Troi dumped me, since I caught Counselor Troi sleeping with my brother,
Counselor Troi dumped me via subspace message. That is
who does that
without honor.
I cried out to the heavens to let them know a warrior's relationship was coming.
Let Stovacor know that a warrior is single. Special moment in this episode, Ben, because it's Mocktoberfest time for Kern, which means it's all you can eat gach and $1 blood wine all month.
Yeah, Quark is wearing lederhosen down at the Quark's bar to
if
get into the
If only we
theme
had that Klingon restaurant there still, right? This would be perfect.
That guy was great. And put him in lederhosen, that would be very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of skipped ahead a little bit because Kern has boarded the station drunk. Worf gets called out of his holosuite program to go meet him. And
he gets called out of like an almost about to put a kiss on Dax in order to go meet Kern.
Yeah, kind of kiss us, interrupt us.
And Kern is a very angry dude.
Miserable Koritz!
Easy. None of us Koritz is going to hurt you.
The deal is Kern has been sort of blindsided by all of the super high-level political decisions that Worf has been a party to, and what's happened is that the House of Moog has fallen into fairly ill repute.
That's right. By not joining Gowron in the Klingon War, he brought great shame upon his family. So much shame that the Klingon government took away their seat on the High Council, took away their land, and took away their ships. So Kern is pretty pissed off about this.
Justifiably, I think.
You get a couple things with Kern when he shows up in a certain place, especially a place where Worf is. He makes fun of the textiles and everything that Worf interacts with. Like, he hates his food, he hates his clothes, he hates his couch.
He really thinks that Worf has gone soft, and
he's looking around for that turkey dinner.
He's basically saying you've got to check your Starfleet privilege. Like, these decisions you're making are splashing over on me, and I'm fucked.
Yeah.
And I have no honor anymore, and it's all your fault, and the only way you can make it up to me is by dipping a knife in some poison and sticking it into me.
You were totally right earlier by saying that Kern's gripe is sound, and it's sort of fucked that Worf makes all these decisions without considering Kern at all. Worf makes decisions without considering Alexander or Troi, for that matter.
Right. Worf is a bad person.
I think we're starting
from a certain read.
Yeah, we're starting to construct a thesis that goes like that, right?
I think this episode is a lot about him kind of confronting that, but I'm not sure. I mean, we'll get into it, but I'm not sure. Like, I mean, how about just the fact that he gives Kern a glass of unrefrigerated green chartreuse as a hangover cure?
For your head.
Does that work? I know
you're
you're a chartreuseman from back in the day.
I love chartreuse, but I would never drink it the morning after.
Yeah, a big warm glass of it just sounds very syrupy and not refreshing.
Yeah. I'm not really sure like what the most traditional way to drink chartreuse is, but I like it with a big piece of ice.
I also like it that way.
I mean, this glass, it looks like a great glass, like a nice square-sided rocks glass, and you put like a big giant large format ice cube in there with some chartreuse. That would be great. Not on hangover morning, but it would be a great drink.
You know, Kern is complaining about that large format ice too. This is not the ice of a warrior. Which
your
as
Federation 2-inch ice cube with no cloudiness, because you have removed all of the air and impurities.
The D7 ice machine famously dispenses pebble ice, the ice of a warrior.
It crunches so pleasantly.
I love Tony Todd in this episode, man.
Yeah, he's the fucking best.
And he sort of writes over the tape that was the old Jake Sisko episode of earlier in the season. Like, this is peak Tony Todd. This is what he needs to be doing. He doesn't need to slum it with old Jake Sisko.
I mean, I love that Tony Todd, like, an actor of the caliber of Tony Todd is, like, a recurring...
Yeah.
Guest actor on this show, and they have strategies for putting him in multiple different characters. Like,
you want to strategically deploy Tony Todd. Yeah,
it's one of the great things about Star Trek.
Yeah, I like that. He's sort of their you know, remember like the Rushmore players? He's like a regular. He's like the Philip Seymour Hoffman of Deep Space Nine. He's great.
Goldacott.
The cut.
Goldacott.
So
we cut to O'Brien and Kira doing a runabout mission, and I really liked their kind of like the Kira trying to get a lay flat bed in the front of the runabout.
I love her improvised lay flat. That's fun.
Yeah, it's good. It's impressive that these runabout seats can do that.
She puts in a hard 8 hours of sleep up there too. I'm shocked.
There are bunks in the back of the runabout.
That's great, but she probably just wanted to remain vigilant, you know?
Yeah, she's a little worried about going back there and getting great big long fingernails, so.
You think what... I'm sure that rumor went around the D after that mission was over, right? And you know O'Brien told Kira all about it.
Oh, yeah, she's like walking back there and it's like, you know, you could get great big long fingernails if you go back there.
I'd recommend not grabbing the fruit.
Steer clear of the fruit bowl.
They don't get long to talk about the fruit bowls or anything else because a mystery space banger gets dropped on them.
It's like a what was that? And they're scanning it, and it's like it seems like an explosion that happened really close, and we're really close to Bajoran space, but it does not add up. And they start to speculate that a cloaked ship might have exploded.
So they scan for life forms, Ben.
Mm.
They scan and scan till
I love doing that. I even sing a little song when I do that, Adam.
I know. Yeah,
I sing, life forms, you precious little life forms, you tiny little life forms, where are you?
My preference would be for no backing music there. Just you singing that into the void.
Wow.
The void that is my unsmiling face.
Oh, man. Thought we were pals.
The coroner decloaks to tell them that there's nothing to see here, guys. We're doing a war game, so you guys can just fuck right off. This is none of your business.
And it's like the, we're following the letter... not the spirit of international treaties kind of thing. Like we've given you the one warning we are required by law to give you. And if you hang around any longer, we're going to fucking kill you.
It's a real throwback to old Star Trek. The iciness between the Federation and the Klingons is very pronounced here.
It's back, baby.
Yeah. It's like a Star Trek VI level of iciness. There will be no dinners on Deep Space Nine planned.
Yeah. Chartreuse ought to be outlawed.
Oh, anyone reading a radiation surge? Only the size of Kern's head, evidently.
Dax heads down to her customary hot and heavy Mechleth fight with Worf, which is apparently now a routine bit of business. Huh. And Quark is preparing a couple of hangover cures, and he's like, "Oh yeah, Worf's not here. He was asking about some kind of incense that I could not procure from him aside from replicated." And that turned into a little bit of a kerfuffle.
This was more than his standard rudeness.
And Dax is like, "Oh, okay. Well, I'll keep looking."
Dax does that thing where she's like, "Hey, computer, where's Worf right now?" And the computer says that Worf is in his quarters and that Kern is with him.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's right, that the computer can just tell you who is with a person. That seems like like Kern would have a right to privacy at some level.
Right. Well, she hasn't even gotten, like, because when she was there when Worf got the call from Odo, but it was just, as far as she knows, he was just called away to deal with some Klingon.
Right.
But when she bumps into Odo on the promenade, he's like, "Oh yeah, it was this guy Kern, who's apparently Worf's brother." Yeah. And that's when she realizes the significance of the incense.
Right, because Dax is a collector of Klingon trivia and cultural knowledge. And so she's like, added the Donji incense to the Kern appearance, and that equals Worf is going to ceremonially kill him.
Yeah. She's kind of a weeaboo, but for Klingons. and when she hears about this incense and hears about Worf's brother, she puts two and two together very quickly.
Yeah.
And we smash cut to Worf's quarters, where he is preparing the ritual blade to plunge into, holy shit, the loafiest chest I think we've ever seen.
Yeah, and like, it's sort of in the dark a little bit, so you can't make it out completely, but wow, that is a real thing.
Boy, I also went back to see if this was the same suicide knife that Worf had on the D.
Uh-huh.
It's not.
Yeah, brand new knife.
This is a nicer, more symmetrical blade. Doesn't seem like he poison dipped it also. Like, that would have been a nice precaution against what happens, which is that Dax and Odo bust in, and Kern has been stabbed, but they, beam him immediately to the infirmary, and Odo lets Worf know, like, "Hey, if he dies, that's going to be a murder charge on you, bub."
This is going to sound like faint praise. I don't mean it like that. Like, I so rarely feel very surprised watching this show. Uh-huh. But I was very surprised when Worf stabbed his brother here. I thought for sure that Dax would get there in time to prevent it.
Yeah, you thought she was gonna beat the buzzer.
Yeah, but she does not.
You know what else really surprised me about this scene? We go to a wide shot of Worf's quarters. He did not keep that weird chair when he moved.
Nope.
You would think that you make a choice like that in your home decor, that you're going to stick to your guns. But apparently he took the opportunity leaving the D to unburden himself of the weird chair.
I wonder if the balls chair went up for auction after TNG ended and they just lost it at that point.
Did it go down with the D when it crashed on that planet?
Oh, shit. You know it did.
Fuck.
Worf's balls chair is somewhere on Viridian 3 right now. Just like just like the jungle, like totally overgrowing the saucer. You know what's crazy? Like, I wonder whatever happened to the saucer. Did they go back and get it and salvage it? They had to have, right? That's legit. That's valuable Federation materiel right there.
We talked about how, like, the Moriarty computer chip is probably involved in that crash, right?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. And there's a million other little, like, objects that got created and
squirreled away over the course of that show. God, who knows, man?
I cannot believe that they never did anything with that on DS9 or in Voyager or anything else. Like, that ship is so iconic, and that, you know, there are Galaxy class models around.
I think that, like, one of the most fun things in the newer Disney Star Wars movies is seeing, like, planets where an entire Star Destroyer is decaying, a crash from decades ago that's still there.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a cool idea, and boy, it would be fun to see the Star Trek version of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Maybe they'll do that in the Picard series.
God. Ugh. Oh.
Hey, speaking of taking great care with props that seem like they'll be worth something someday, they do not do that with the knife that that Worf stabbed Kern with, because the next shot is just it, like, unbagged, untagged, sitting on Sisko's desk with blood still all over it.
Whose fault is that? That's Odo's fault, right?
Odo, you gotta bag the evidence.
Yeah.
It's going to get everybody's fingerprints all over it.
Worf's going to walk for this.
Yeah. The chain of custody on the prosecution's key exhibit will have been broken, and the whole case is going to be thrown out.
I am sad that the blood on the knife isn't bubblicious colored like Star Trek VI.
That always bothers me.
Give me that pink blood.
Yeah.
They didn't need to do that.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my instinct. I don't use the bucket anymore.
So the issue here is that Worf is supposed to be head of Klingon shit on Deep Space Nine, but all of his Kern drama is making him incapable of conducting that important business. And there's some pretty intense Klingon shit going on with this whole explosions in space near Bajor situation.
He's torn, right? He's a man in between cultures. He thinks he can get away with a ritualistic murder in his quarters, but he can't. And Sisko lights him up over this.
We're not talking about some obscure technicality, Mr. Worf. You tried to commit premeditated murder.
And I thought it was very interesting to hear Sisko talk about this issue in this episode, because he's like, he's basically writing for, like, isolate this man from members of his species because they are a bad influence on him right now.
I don't want Worf anywhere near other Klingons right now.
For people who don't watch Star Trek Discovery for some reason, they might not get this reference, but in the episode in season 2 where they return to Saru's home planet and then, like, intentionally make him not a part of the mission once they're there. It feels like that, like isolating the best person for a job W/R/T their own culture.
Right.
It's a pretty painful thing to decide.
Because Worf is really trying to remain Klingon.
Yeah.
In this episode. Speaking of Discovery.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course he wants to remain Klingon, but he also wants to remain apart from everyone, and that is a tension in him. Like, he wants to be alone.
Right.
He makes decisions throughout this episode that seek to other himself.
I can dig it, man.
Yeah.
Sometimes I never want to be around anyone.
They do an interesting cross-cut here. They cross-cut from 10 out of 10 Sisko to super chill Sisko talking to O'Brien and Kira, and it's a little whiplashy emotionally.
I love the using the amount that Sisko has chilled out as an indicator of the passage of time.
Yeah.
like what a fun cut that was.
Yeah.
And he's just, he's like down in the ripple mat, like having a cup of coffee and sending O'Brien and Kira out on B story stuff. Like, go take the little D out and see if you can figure out what is going on just on the other side of the Bajoran border with these cloaked explosions.
I like the assignment, and I like who he has assigned to it. You know, so often you associate the little D with Worf in command. It's nice to see Kira get the big chair here.
Yeah.
That's what you want. And Kira knows that they have lay flat seats on the little D, so she's jumping at the opportunity.
And nobody has ever grown really long fingernails grabbing the wrong bowl of fruit.
No, you can have any piece of fruit you want on the little D.
Yeah. The world is your horn of plenty on the little D.
Kern's going to survive his stab wound because they've stuck him in an iron lung type situation in the infirmary.
I was interpreting that as like one of those pyramids that woo-woo new agey healers use.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a copper pyramid shape, and you lie under it, and it makes you feel better.
I think what we can agree on is that it's a totally new piece of medical technology we're seeing deployed. I don't remember seeing this thing before.
It's an obviously Cardassian piece of medical technology, yeah. Which I thought was interesting. Like, often the doctor has the most Federation-looking stuff on this show, and it's interesting that I guess maybe like this is the one that works with his biobed.
I really love the composition of this scene as they intercut between Kern in a close-up and kind of a mediumish shot shooting up at Worf with that run of lights behind him.
Yeah, that's
so
you
rarely see the ceiling on Deep Space Nine, and this is a moment where you do.
Yeah, and it's beautifully lit. Also, like the. It's almost all rim light on Worf, and he has so many like lumps and bumps in his loaf that you can resolve a facial expression despite that.
Kern's like, grab a triangular pillow and place it over my face.
I promise I won't scream loud enough to penetrate the foam.
Worf is like, you need a job.
Yeah, so Kern is going to recover, and Worf is not going to help him do suicide by Worf anymore. And so the idea is that Kern is going to get a job as a security guy in the Bajoran militia. And I love this idea. Like, Worf has to go kind of like make the case to Odo that this is a great idea.
Yeah.
And Odo is pretty skeptical at first because Kern has a lot of notches in his belt, as they say, but not a lot of experience like doing non-lethal enforcement of rules and regulations.
Yeah. Odo is reading the resume that Worf hands him from Kern, and he's like, well, Kern has some pretty strong work experience, and he knows Excel and PowerPoint, but his experience is lacking in some non-lethal area of police.
I would love to see the episode Police Academy : Kern in Training.
What they don't know can't stop them.
We don't quite get that. Like, we get to see him, like, being, you know, kind of shadowed by Odo in his first day on the job.
Hey, before we get there, Ben, why is Odo treating Worf like shit in this scene? Like, Odo goes so far as to say, like, you're really going to owe me a favor, asshole.
And Mr. Worf, you'll find I'm a man who collects on his debts.
But, like, why is Odo pissed at Worf? If anything, Worf should have carryover pissed off feelings toward Odo for being a shitty constable from the Shikar episode, right? What's happening?
I don't know. I mean, Odo did very recently watch Worf shove a knife into a guy's chest in cold blood.
Oh,
from
yeah.
From Odo's standpoint.
You know, I forgot about that. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because you're seeing it from Worf's point of view.
Yeah.
But from Odo's point of view, that was crazy.
And that was only 15 minutes ago.
Don't forget me.
Just put the evidence on my desk. Nope, don't put it in that bag. Just put it on the desk. Kern works for like the glorified TSA of the station. They put him in a brown uniform like he's a UPS man. He looks like the recliner inside a man cave.
In his Barca Lounger getup, he's like tossing a cargo bay as...
He's like, liquids smaller than 3 ounces should be removed from your checked bag.
Your laptop must go in a gray bin, but an iPad may remain inside your backpack. If you untuck your shirt, so that it covers your belt, I won't notice it and make you take it off. Even if you know it won't set off the metal detector, I'll make you take it off. I don't really care about security. I care about enforcing rules.
This is a pre-check line. You may keep your footwear on.
You have a series of 7 S's on your boarding pass. Therefore, you have been randomly selected to go in the body scanner.
Who knew we had Kern impression going? That's great. Where has this been our whole life?
I don't know.
This is dumb.
Kern's fun.
What are you doing now?
Karen O'Brien head out back to where they were when they were in their runabout the first time, and they're scanning around, and just like out of nowhere, a Vorcha class battle cruiser explodes in space in front of them, like comes out of cloak as it's exploding. And it's kind of like that that like Americans offering Russians emergency help in a like Cold War nuclear context.
You're telling me that this is a massive rescue operation?
That is correct.
They're like, hey, can we do anything to help? And they're like, fuck off! We don't need you.
I would have liked to have heard explosions in the background of this hail, you know? Yeah. As it is, the captain of this Vorcha class ship is like pretty calm and cool, but his ship is fucked up. It looks like it rolled over into a ditch.
We do not require assistance at this time. Do not approach us.
Understood, Dravana.
His ship is badly, badly damaged. Lots of people getting hurt. It seems like he has to check with somebody when they're like, hey, we could tow you to Deep Space Nine. He's like, okay.
Kira's like, deploy the winch.
and Chief O'Brien is like so psyched that he bought that off the aftermarket parts website for his Wrangler.
Later on, Odo has to radio Worf to say that Kern is in the infirmary because he let himself get shot. He attempted suicide by Boslik, which is a pretty bad way to go.
I think we met this guy before. He's the kind of short-statured captain of the ship that Kern was pressing earlier, and I guess this guy pulled a piece on him when Kern discovered some contraband in his cargo hold. So,
what are you going to do about it? You won't shoot me, Boslik. I fucking dare you.
Come on, shoot me. Shoot me right here. I'll lift up my shirt and show you my weird loafy chest.
And Kern is like the sort of patient at this point that's like, you know,
Worf, my life is in your hands, and when lives are in your hands, they are incredibly safe.
Because that's Worf's deal, right? Like, ritualistically, you know, if you set aside the ritual from before the show open, every time Worf has been given the chance to kill someone in a ritualistic fashion, he chooses not to. So at this point in the episode, I felt like Kern was pretty safe.
Yeah, but he's kind of on the outs with his boss. Odo is like, hey, like, we can't have a guy who is trying to get killed on the team.
Yeah. The little D has towed the Dervana to Deep Space Nine, and it is looking totally ratchet. Parked outside the station.
Good ship gore. And I
really
like the pan down from the ship to the station.
Love it. Love this.
Yeah.
They literally kitbashed the ship model here. Great.
They have a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Where they're kind of talking through what is going on with all of this cloaked explosion shit. And They're like, it kind of seems like a torpedo hit this ship, but we would have been able to detect torpedo traces. Like, one thing that's crazy about this episode is that, like, everywhere they go, they're like, I don't detect any cloaked ships. And it's like, yeah, that's the point of cloaking, right? Like, suddenly cloaked things are like, have like very easy to find signatures that you can scan for in space.
Yeah.
But yeah, they come up with the idea that this is actually a minefield.
And they call it a mine. A mine!
That the Klingons are surreptitiously laying, and that something went wrong with one of these mines, and they like accidentally bumped it with their ship.
They need to figure out the coordinates for all these mines, because by virtue of their being cloaked, like, there's no way to find them unless you actually run a ship into one. And right. Worf has the idea to use Kern and to board the Dervahna in order to get said coordinates.
Yeah.
The better idea would be Odo, but Odo and Worf are not getting along right now, I think.
Yeah, so Worf and Kern are going to beam over there, Worf impersonating a Klingon to do it.
Joke.
I got it.
Yeah, they have to get uglied up a little bit.
Yeah.
Before going, that's fun.
And they also, like, I guess they have some bodies from the infirmary, so they're able to mimic the DNA of one of them in Worf's hand. I liked this little bit of tradecraft.
Yeah, me too.
They're getting into their suits, and Kern feels alive again for the first time. You know, he likes to be in the Klingon armor and not the Bajoran pajamas.
I thought for sure he was going to find a way to get himself killed on this mission. Like, I thought that was going to be the point of this.
Yeah. Instead, it's a straight up and down spy mission.
Worf like, and Kern board.
Like, why didn't he throw himself in front of that guy with the knife in his sleeve?
Yeah, that would have been a good way to go. Then it's suicide by Klingon, and then it's full of honor.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
Super honorary.
There's a fun scene here where, you know, there's a scene sometimes where you get, like in an action film, you get someone who's not good at computers trying to do computers.
There must be an on button somewhere. Press the Apple thing.
And so Worf and Kern are clicking around trying to find the mine location, and Worf is like, I have found a folder called Mine Locations. And Kern is like, you fool! You do not hide your pornography in a folder called Pornography. You hide it in a folder called Work Documents. And so Kern knows to click on something else that's not Mine Locations in order to get the Mine Locations.
Yeah, it's that super high-level Klingon tradecraft that is always so impressive.
Click on the folder called Not Pornography.
You will find there are several subfolders that also say Not Pornography. All of this can be circumvented if you just search for the .avi file extension at the system level. Or in the recently downloaded list in the BitTorrent application.
Ben, this is the last Kern episode, and it fucking sucks. It means we're retiring our Kern impression, and we're not going to see Kern again.
It's too bad. He never got to turn to Worf and say, Worf, the door to Klingon society for you is as complicated as any door. So this Klingon lieutenant that catches them, like, goes for Worf with a knife, and Kern kills him. And, you know, his disruptor blast leaves only a pile of mashed potatoes with a whisk sticking out of it. But on Klingon ships, they don't have that alarm that goes off. So they're able to complete the mission.
Awesome.
Morn.
Dear sweet. Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
The mission goes well, though, Enterprise. Mm. They get the mine locations. It's a real Operation Chromite success story.
Uh-huh.
And they go back to the station. They get an attaboy from Sisko. And then they go their separate ways, like Kira and O'Brien head out on the little D to address the mine problem, and Worf goes to like drink with Dax and bemoan the tough spot his brother is in. And what she comes up with is real fucked up.
Yeah, it really is. And the idea is fucked. Who is complicit in this idea is fucked. Who is not involved at all in this idea is also fucked.
Right.
Because Dax has proposed killing Kern without actually killing him.
As far as we know, right, Kern isn't a party to this decision?
Nope. It's like murdering someone's mind.
Right. Why would Bashir agree to do this?
This would have been so much more interesting if Kern was party to this, because it would be okay if he were. If Kern was like, yeah, do it. Like, destroy my mind. And then they went ahead and did it. Then the same outcome happens. And it feels a little better because part of it is his choice.
Yeah.
But they do this to him instead of with him. And that makes this plan super dark.
There's an argument to be made that he is so, like, beyond help that it needs to be this way. Like, you could kind of make the argument that Worf is doing what Kern asked him to do in killing his mind.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make any sense that Bashir would agree to be part of it without Kern, like, expressly. Like, what they should have is, like, some kind of, like, ritual contract that they sign and then, like, make secret in some interesting Klingon-y way.
It feels like, as someone who practices medicine, there should be some things that you do as a doctor that rise to command level permission. And I think destroying a patient's mind should rise to that level. I think Sisko needs to be involved.
Right.
Before they lobotomize Kern, you know?
Yeah.
Also, I would prefer if you do it with an ice pick.
It seems I've been on the show enough times that a clip show device might be usable.
And it's weird, right, that they do it off screen, too. You never see the device. You never see, you know, the sparkle in his eye fade. It's just sort of a thing that they talk about, and it's a thing that happens off screen.
And then the next time you see him, he has, like, different loaf.
Yeah, like they need to do three things to him. It's a loaf transplant, it's changing his genetic code, and it's wiping his memory. I've got to believe that, like, there's a deception in this that is dishonorable on some level, right? Yet that's never referred to in any way.
I mean, it sort of seems like the elevator going to every floor in the building on Shabbos because you're not supposed to push the button. Mm. Kind of a loophole. Like, like sometimes when your, like, religion doesn't map that well onto the world you find yourself into, you just have to find workarounds.
Yeah.
Like, there is a lot that is extraordinary here, up to and including the fact that just, like, a friend of their dad's comes and is like, I am your dad, and you forgot everything, but I'll teach you everything. Like, what was this guy doing that he was, like, available to just come out of retirement and rehabilitate Kern?
I think we need more time with Nagra. I think that is super clear. Like, this
also,
guy
would be fun to see Nog meet Nagra.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real Uma Oprah situation. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
The button on the episode is this moment where Kern, who is now Rodek, wakes up, meets Nagra, and then on his way out of the infirmary is like, hey, who are you? He looks at Worf and he's like, do I know you? And Worf is like, I don't know you and I don't have a family. And that's it.
Way to make it about yourself. I'm the one suffering from amnesia.
Your bedside manner leaves much to be desired.
And it's like kind of the end of The Incredible Hulk. Worf walks out of the infirmary and into a wide shot on the promenade, you know, away from one family and into what to be considered another. But, you know, neither family is a family that he wants a relationship with. He's just utterly alone, and it's by choice.
Yeah.
Pretty dark ending.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
What I liked most of all was David Livingston's direction. This looked visually like a fairly unique episode in terms of its interesting angles and its framing and its lighting. I really liked it, and I really, like, latched on to some of the interesting compositions that he did. I mean,
yeah.
I love Kern. I think it's a little bit like, it's a little bit of a retread every time he shows up and he just makes fun of Worf for how soft he's gotten. But this time, maybe more than any other, he really gets to Worf with how soft he's become. Like, yeah. Worf has a conversation with Dax at one point, and he's like, you know, I used to be able to tell when someone was trying to kill me just by looking at someone. That's a Klingon superpower. Like, you look at someone's eyes, and you can tell if they're trying to kill you, and I don't have that anymore. And that was an interesting bit of Klingon trivia that I don't think we've gotten before. I like to see non-human values and human values collide, and they really fucking collide in this episode in a way that is uncomfortable for so many people.
Yeah, I started to talk about it a little bit in the thing, but like one position Sisko gets in, it, which is interesting, you know, given his place in history as a Star Trek captain, especially, is that he's like, I can't tolerate this amount of cultural diversity, or like there are limits to tolerance of cultural diversity.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a hard thing to say.
Yeah.
I'm sad that this is the last appearance of Kern. I really liked that scene where the little D detonates one mine and as a warning and then detonates a whole sequence of them. Like, that seemed like a unique and fun effect. And I like that it was Kira that did it.
It's like flushing pheasants.
Yeah. I'd like to see Kira in the chair more, like running the D. I think that's fun. But yeah, I think all in all, like adding all of those things up, I think it adds up into an episode that I liked. What about you?
I really liked the episode. I think it makes the case for Kern being a great character, and it is a real shame that it ends his character.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a way to find a solution to this problem.
For how many more seasons there are in Deep Space Nine, and with how great Tony Todd is, like, there are ways to bring him back and make it interesting.
Sure.
Bring back Nagra, too.
Yeah. Nagra seems really interesting.
It's an interesting place to put a dead end for a character. I'll say that.
I agree.
You know, Ben, one area of our show that is never a dead end is the endless spring of Priority One messages.
That's true.
You want to see what we have over there?
I would love to.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
You know, Endless Spring is the brand of soap that I buy. It's a generic version of Irish Spring, and it's a tremendous value.
Yeah, you buy it by the bale at Costco.
You have to cut your own bars. You get it in just one giant bar, and you've got to cut the little bars off.
They give you one of those weird wire cutters.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like cutting cheese.
Yeah. Adam, we have a couple of Priority One messages here. The first is of a commercial nature.
Oh.
It goes like this. To all the jazz horse lovers, if you mourn the passing of Genuine or have been attacked by cougars, you will like the fantasy western series The Devil's Revolver by V.S. McGrath. Hetty Alabama's on a desperado quest to save her sister. At her side, a cursed gun that ages her a year for every life she takes, and the body count's rising. The Devil's Revolver books 1 through 3 are available now. Visit devilsrevolver.com and look for cameos by Ben and Adam in book 4, The Legend of Diablo, coming in 2019.
What?
Holy shit!
Wow.
Damn.
Oh, check out the author. This is V.S. McGrath.
Yeah.
She is she's someone I'm familiar with on Twitter. She's actually a good Twitter commenter.
Wow. Just the cover art alone is really cool looking.
Yeah. Whoa. That's cool.
Neat. Oh, I love the premise too.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that a lot.
So visit devilsrevolver.com for excerpts and reviews of the Devil's Revolver series and get involved. We're going to be in this thing.
Wow. I mean, maybe Genuine lives on. I mean, who knows?
That's great.
That's what you get to do when you're an author. You get to right real life wrongs, like the death of Genuine.
Yeah.
Ben, our second Priority One message is of a personal nature. It is from Matt H. And this message is for victims of imposter syndrome. The message goes like this: in DS9 S3 E21, around the 1 hour, 10 minute, and 15 second mark, Adam said, quote, "Those guys are the kind of smart, fast, funny that I aspire to be," unquote. Then Ben agreed. I'd like to point out that within the first 5 minutes of S3 E22, you are throwing off references to the Oregon Trail and the death of Artax like it's nothing. I've got news. You are that funny. Keep it up.
Oh.
Thanks, Matt H.
I guess we are victims of imposter syndrome sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like anytime you're doing a creative endeavor, it's endemic to that kind of work, a little bit.
I think I've just lived my life on this show with the thinking that, like, if I can just be funny to Ben, I can be satisfied in that. But that is, I'm frequently surprised and grateful that anyone else gets anything out of this show. So that's nice to hear. Thanks, Matt.
It's really, really kind of you. Something I've thought a lot about is that, like, nothing anybody can tell you can prepare you for what it is like to have anyone outside of yourself care about the work you're doing.
Like, well put.
It is like such a, it's something you just have to learn, you know, by doing. And if we let little misgivings like that fly sometimes, you know, I think that's just us being honest about our internal lives with everybody listening.
Yeah, well put.
Not necessarily like a thing we're proud of or anything, but I don't know what I'm trying to say.
It's complicated.
Yeah. Well, if you would like to complicate our lives by getting a Priority One message, you can head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
Yeah, complicate some cash in our pockets.
Yeah, $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And we really appreciate the folks that do that.
Thank you very much. Gotta get that gold press lock. Get that gold press lock.
Am I right? Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What is that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
My Shimoda occurs at a time that you can't see, and I mean, I understand. You can't see every moment of action on this show, but I ache to have seen the Boslik that shot Kern. And, like, what happened exactly in that moment? Because, like, Odo describes the scene. He's like, look, that Boslik could not even hold his disruptor straight. Like, he was fucked up and, like, shitting himself when he shot Kern.
Are you picturing, like, a thing where he pulled it out and then Kern, like, slowly walked toward him and reached out and, like, put his thumb on the guy's trigger finger and pulled it for him?
Yeah, like, there is a scene there that is incredible that we don't get, and I'm sad that we don't get it, but I play it in my mind, and when I do so, the Boslik is my Shimoda. What about you, Ben?
In the last shot, as Kern, now a different guy, walks off, there's a packlet among the people walking around on the promenade, and the packlet looks like he is holding a bunch of salumi, like some like cave-aged Italian sausages. And I was like, yeah, Packlet probably would have like a whole bunch of cured meat that he would want to take from place to place.
Sausages are good. Yeah, sausages make me feel full.
We look for sausages.
I love seeing Packlets on this show. I mean, from what we learned about Packlets on TNG, like they almost would seem to be the largest population on the station.
Yeah.
Given the trade interests that they have.
Right. They're around, man.
Yeah.
You totally see them.
Yeah. Well, Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is Season 4, Episode 15, The Bar Association. Tired of workplace mistreatment at the hands of his brother, Rom organizes all of Quark's employees into a union and goes on strike against the bar.
Wow.
Wow.
What a timely episode.
Yeah, fun.
I'm into that.
I'm ready to get fired up for workers' rights. How about you?
Yeah, this is going to be an episode that alienates a lot of people, but none of those would ever listen to our show. Very cool.
All right. I'm going to head to our game that we always play at the end of these shows. You guys can find it at gach.biz/game.
You're, of course, speaking of Game of Buttholes, Will of the Prophets, aren't you?
Of course I am, Adam. And I see that we are currently on square 14. Oh, wow. That's convenient. We're on square 14 for episode 14. How do you like that?
I like it a lot.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
All right. I'm going to roll. Got the dice in my hands. Do you want to just give this a puff?
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
I've rolled a 3, landing us on square 17, doorstep of a Quark's bar, but this is a reg ep.
You know what always happens, Ben? I always roll ones. So the drunkisode is almost a certainty. The episode after this one, that's what I would say.
I mean, that's how probability works.
Yep. You know how the end of our show works, Ben, is we thank a lot of people.
We do. I think the people we owe the greatest thanks to are the people that go to MaximumFun.org/donate. And contribute to support the show on a monthly basis. It's the reason that this is our main job now. And we really, really appreciate everyone that does that. Of course, if you're not in a position financially to support, there's a lot of other ways that you can help us out. You can tell a friend or coworker or family member if you think they would like the show. Recommend it to people, and also recommend it online using social media, using the hashtag GreatestGen, or going to Apple Podcasts and leaving a nice review.
Yeah, you know what's crazy is like you look at the metrics for this show and it continues to grow beyond all reason or understanding. I don't know why.
If you use the Overcast app on iOS, which is a great podcatcher app,
yeah, it's the one
they
I
have
use.
A feature now where you can like bounce out a minute of audio from a podcast in video form. And it like makes a little video graphic of what the show's show art is, and you can share that on social media. It's a really fun way to isolate a favorite moment from the show or something. If something makes you laugh, if you think other people would like it, share it online using that little feature.
Yeah, I love sharing clips. That's fun.
Super fun, and we've seen a few on social media already, and it is really delightful to see what people pick.
If only I could share a clip of Bill Tilly or J.J. Lendl, I would, but that's not how it works when we thank them for the work that they do for our show. J.J. Lendl makes fun movie-style posters for every episode that we release, and Bill Tilly releases trading card-style pieces of artwork with custom jokes that are just the best week in and week out. And we appreciate their efforts both.
Indeed we do.
Hey, I just want to throw this out there. Doing a wellness check for Raz and Plavim. I'm just going to like put that out into the world. Haven't heard from either of them in a while. Hope they're good.
Yeah. We should thank Adam Ragusea, who made all the custom theme music for our show, and Dark Materia, who made the original Picard song, which was the original theme music for our show. And all the great folks at MaximumFun.org that help us with putting the show together every week. And go check out other shows on MaximumFun.org, including Friendly Fire, which is our war movie podcast we do with John Roderick. It's on tour right now. Go check out friendlyfire.fm/live if you're interested in seeing us live on tour doing something not this.
We've not made plans to tour Greatest Gen, so this may be your only chance in a while to see us. Come out and see us. We'd love to see you.
Come see us.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which seizes the means of production.
Hell yeah!
You better do one thing during the next episode, Ben. You better be wearing your fucking sabot. And you better be ready to fucking throw him.
Hence the word sabotage.
I would draw a fairly bright line between Luddites and workers who are trying to have a good contract with their employer, Adam.
Look,
I don't think all people in the labor movement are anti-technology.
I'm saying it might come to the point of throwing your sabot into the machine.
Okay. I mean, I'll wear them just in case.
I'm not taking Sabo off the table. That's what I'm trying to say.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.